Good morning for Every Day is Earth Day today. We are talking with a faculty member here from Minnesota State University, Mankato. It is Dr. Mugongo Day, who is an assistant professor of the Department of Biological Sciences here on campus, and he is honored to be selected to present at the 50th Annual Douglas R. Moore Faculty Research Lecture here at Minnesota State University, Mankato. It's going to be taking place Monday, April 1st, and will feature his presentation called Can We Generate Soil Health and Enhance Corn Productivity in the U.S. Corn Belt Through the Perennial Cover Crops and Poultry Integration? Good morning, Dr. Day.
Thank you for having me, Karen.
It's always good to have you. Now, that's a long title. So can you sum it up in a little bit so people who are listening say, what?
I know. It's a long title. But I my goal was to kind of cover up what are the things that I'm doing so that I have all those important words that I want to, you know, spread among my audience or my viewers, whoever is coming to my talk, and they would be learning about it. So, yeah, as you want me to sum it up, so basically what we are trying to do is we are in the Midwest. We are in Minnesota. We cannot escape from corn and soybean. So I chose corn because that's also one of our major crops that we are growing here. But, you know, we have a lot of problems when we are doing that because year after year we are growing corn. But that means we are actually putting a lot of pressure on our soils, okay? So that was kind of the goal, and I know a lot of scientists, a lot of people, they're working on these things that, okay, how we can improve our soil health. That's why I have that term, that soil health. So there are multiple ways that we can improve our soil health. So one of the important part is using cover crops. Now, in this region, or pretty much the Midwest, commonly, farmers, they use the annual cover crops, but I wanted to try something perennial cover crops.
Perennials, so, really?
Yeah.
I hadn't thought of that, actually. Yeah. So is that why it's called regenerative, to regenerate soil?
Yeah. So think about, that's what I always say, that, hey, you know, in the morning when you go to a class, to my students, if you are not feeling like energized, you need an energy drink to regenerate yourself, isn't that? So that means you have a life already there, but can we regenerate that? So that means you are bringing those life even back, all right? That's how I look at it. So when we think about the regenerating our agriculture or like our soil health systems, how can we do that? And there are different ways that we can do it, okay? So one of the ways could be minimizing our soil disturbance, all right? That means reducing the tillage practices.
So no-till practices?
No-till, or maybe some of this can be strip-till. It could be some of those like ridge-till. Those are like a different kind of no-till or reduced tillage kind of systems that farmers, they know how to do it. Then other thing would be very important as a part of this regenerative agriculture, or the soil health promoting practices, would be, can we cover our soils? Okay.
Cover meaning?
So cover meaning, like if you think about a corn row.
Right.
All right. Where you have one row of corn, another row of corn.
And then nothing in between.
Nothing in between.
Okay.
Exactly, right? So what happens to that part? So that means we get the rainfall and then our soil starts to erode.
Sure.
Right? So that means there is a lot of amount of, either could be water erosion with the help of rainfall, or in Minnesota, we get some of those days, like a lot of windy days, isn't that? So we are losing those soils, that means, right? And when we are losing those top soils, that means at the same time, we are losing a lot of those organic matter that was already present. And I always say this, that, you know, we are privileged that, okay, we are in that part of the world where we have a very, very fertile, very productive soils, one of the best soils in the world that we have. But if we do not take care of our soil, that means we will start to lose. And that is what's happening right now, actually.
Do you have any figures that you've looked at that show how much of that beautiful fertile loam that we had before and how much it's gone down in the years because of maybe not the best farming practices, for example?
Yeah. So there's a very important figure, actually, that I also sometimes show it to my class, that, okay, let's assume that, okay, before European settlement that happened here in this region, we used to have a lot of prairies here, right? We used to have a lot of bison, which were roaming around. We had those beautiful prairies. And since we are in the temperate region, we get a lot of snow and all, right? It's a very cold environment. And that's why we got a huge amount of soil organic matter here. So I'll give you a perspective here. So here, in the Midwest, or pretty much like in Minnesota, if I think about it, currently on an average 5 to 6% soil organic matter that we can see it. Okay. But it used to be more than that. Okay. Like I when I visit different farmers, I see some of the farmers, they have like about 8 to 10% maybe.
Okay. You mean, so they have more of this?
More of this in some of their pockets of their farm, maybe.
What do you call that then? I mean, I called it loam, but that's not maybe the right.
So when I talk about the loam, it's we are thinking about in my soil science term, it'll be more like a texture. So okay. When I think about the texture, that means what is the proportion of sand, silt, and clay?
Okay.
So when we think about the loam, that's the type or the texture where you have sand, silt, and clay in a almost equal proportion.
Okay.
Then we will call it more like a loamy soil. If I'm thinking about sandy soils, you have more sand percentage, very small, maybe silt, very small, maybe clay.
So which is the best one for crops then that we want?
Of course, loam, because where you have a nice proportion, right? But there are a lot of different factors which play into role when you are growing any crop in any soil, kind of. It's not only just the texture, but I always say that the soil organic matter is the heart of our soil ecosystem, you know?
Sure.
So now going back to that one, that soil organic matter. So we used to have a lot more, but over the time, like last 200, 300 years after the European settlement happened here, we started clearing up, right? Now we have everything converted into corn and soybean, like all these row crops, that's what we call them. So now we see almost 50 to 60% of the soil organic matter is gone.
Wow, that's a lot.
That is a lot.
Because it's not easy to build back up.
No.
Right.
It does not. And I actually published a paper a few years back where I have shown that, okay, even though in a CRP or Conservation Reserve Program, which is one of the USDA's land retirement program, with the help of those perennial grasses, even within 40 years, we did not see a huge amount of change.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So definitely it's not going to happen overnight. And that is another thing I always say to my farmer friends that, hey, we have to have patience because we have lost it and that's our fault. But we can bring them back if we manage our soils maybe properly.
Now, you're doing research about this. So tell us, what is your research about specifically? What is your goal?
Sure. So in this project that I'll be presenting on 1st April, so the project actually started, or I would say the seed was sown sometime in, you know, year 2020.
Okay.
When I first wrote a proposal, something similar on that route for Minnesota Corn Growers Association at that time. It didn't get funded, all right? But I'm like, all right, we'll try again. And then we wrote the same proposal, I tweaked it, and I added another layer on top of that, and that was like integration of poultry, which was not previously there, okay? So previously my project was that, okay, within my corn rows, I'll be adding some perennial cover crops, which is not conventionally farmers they are practicing, because they are doing more like an annual cover crop species. But I want to try perennial. And the reason behind that when we are trying these annual cover crops, usually they are grown like sometime in fall before the main cash crop is being harvested, just before that. And then in the spring, we usually terminate them and then we grow our next cash crop.
Right.
Now, every year, that means farmers, they are investing their money, their time, their resources. So it's a lot. Okay.
Right.
So it might not be super economically viable method. So when I'm thinking about the perennials, that means I can just plant them one time and then get the benefit in multiple years.
So when you say perennials, what I think of for farm fields is things like alfalfa. I don't know if that's
exactly
what you have in mind.
You got it.
Oh, okay.
You got it. So I'm getting into that one. So we have in this project like four different treatments. Okay. One, we have the control where we have just the conventional way, that means 30-inch corn that we are growing. And in between those corn rows, we have no cover crops.
Just dirt.
That's it. Okay. Even though in my world, I don't call it dirt, though.
Right, that's
true. I call it soil. And then I have three other treatments where I have wide row corn. That's what I'm trying now, which is 60-inch corn row.
So the corn rows are 60 inches apart?
60.
Oh, wow, that's really far, because usually it's 30, right?
Usually it's 30 inch.
Okay, we're doubling.
So the main purpose of this doubling is that you are creating more opportunity space.
Right.
And you are providing more sunlight for your cover crops, because usually within the 30 inch corn rows, when we grow them, sometimes they're like, I'm not getting my sunlight. Very shady sometimes. And usually when you have more cover crop biomass, it's actually good for the soil health, kind of. So usually we don't get that sometimes. So that was the idea, and a lot of people, they are already trying it, and It's there, but still a lot of research that we need to do, honestly. Okay.
So do you have farmers that you work with that are specifically doing this now?
Yes.
And do they have to have special planters? Because I'm picturing, you know, my dad had a brill seeder for the alfalfa and he had a corn planter for the corn, for example.
Correct. So, yeah, so I'm currently working with a farmer in Faribault County, close to Blue Earth City. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I met him in one of the field days and I found out that, okay, he's very energetic and he wants to try something new and he's a risk taker. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I pitched in my ideas that, hey, do you want to try this thing? And he's like, you know, I'm already doing some wide row corn in one of my small plot. Let's do it. And okay. When I said, okay, it's going to be perennial cover crops. And he said, yeah, I want to try that. Let's see how it works. So it's definitely in a research phase. It's not that, okay, I have all the best answer right now. But coming back to what you asked that, okay, do you need a different types of planter? Yeah. So what my farmer did, he kind of managed what he already had. So sometimes some of those, you know, corn rows, he needs to kind of remove them so that he can make it like a 60-inch corn rows, sure. And still he can plant it. So he worked it. Honestly, we are trying our best to make it work, kind right. of. So we have three treatments here other than that my control within those 60-inch corn rows. So one treatment, I have only legume only. And legume means any kind of beans that you can think about where they are the one which is kind of harvesting or getting a lot of those nitrogen through some of bacteria. They can trap those nitrogen from the atmosphere and give it to the plant, which is good, right? So within that legume treatment, we have some of the species, like you mentioned already one, which is alfalfa. Mm-hmm. We also have another one, it's called white Dutch clover. And then another one that I'm using is bird's foot trefoil. Okay.
Bird's foot trefoil?
Bird's foot trefoil. Okay. So these are the three species that we have selected, and that's what we have been using. We started that project in 2022, 2023 now done, and this is our last year. It's a three-year-long project, and it's funded by Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
Okay.
Yeah. And then my third treatment, I have only grass-only treatment, where I have, it's called Festulolium. It's kind of a mix of some kind of meadow fescue and some kind of rye. Oh. And it already comes like that way. It's pretty good because usually grasses, their root system or root architecture is different. It's very bushy and it can trap a lot of those nitrogen within their body so that we are not losing a lot of those nitrogen which can be lost through water erosion or through leaching losses. And then my fourth treatment where I'm mixing both grass and legume together. So that's how I have four treatments. So control, 30-inch corn row, then legume only, grass only, and then grass-legume mixture. And those are all in 60-inch corn rows. So that's how I have four treatments. And within each treatment, I have also divided that into two split. So that's where that poultry part is interesting. Because as I said, when I started initiating that project, at that time, like 2021, if you remember, fertilizer prices were really, really going up.
Right.
Like from August onwards, right?
Yes.
So I thought like, okay, can we include some kind of livestock integration within my crop? And I looked into my literature. At that time, I didn't see anybody was doing that. And we are adding actually live turkey bird.
Turkeys, not chickens, but
turkeys. Not chickens, but turkeys. I didn't see any literature, you know, on that. I see a lot of people, they use turkey manure, dairy manure,
sure.
or chicken manure, but not as such live turkey bird.
So are they domesticated turkeys or are they the wild turkeys we see a
no,
lot?
No, just the domesticated. So the farmer that I'm working with, usually what he does, he grows a lot of those and then he sells them. And his major idea was like, all right, Thanksgiving coming at that time. I'll be selling them. And that's what he does because he has his another kind of a business, you know, where he sells a lot of different types of meats.
So when you say you have these turkeys, are you letting them out in the field or are you just using their product?
No, we are actually let them run around.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So the way we do that, we have some kind of electric fencing.
Okay.
Okay.
So turkeys don't fly, right?
Usually not.
Usually.
Right? But they can run pretty fast. They're pretty big bird kind of.
Yep.
So yeah, we have that electric fencing and within that, we let them like, all right, go and do your job kind of.
What are they eating in there then? Because you've got the legumes and things and then you've got the corn, which is growing. So what do they eat bugs, or what are they eating there?
Right. That's a very good question, actually. So my major idea when I wrote this proposal, I thought like, okay, if we add those birds, first of all, as I said, the fertilizer prices were going up. That means, can I reduce some of those fertilizer load with the help of some turkey manure? Like when they are moving, they can be, you know, pooping or urinating. That'll be added into my soil. That was the first goal that I had. Second thing is, as they're moving, since I'm adding my live birds, that means they will be foraging. All right. And since we have those cover crops, especially the spestulolium, which is a grass, and that is a very good forage crop, actually. Okay. And they can use that for foraging purposes.
But they don't eat the corn seeds when you plant
no.
those.
No. So what the way we decided, and, you know, sometimes the way you write your proposal, the way you envision, it doesn't work that way.
Okay.
So first year, we actually included our turkey after harvesting.
Oh.
Because the farmer that I'm working with, he was not ready to buy all the turkey that he needed at that time.
Yeah.
Also, first year, we didn't have enough turkey, actually. We had only, I think, 40 turkeys.
Okay.
Last year, we had a very good number, like almost 200 turkeys that we added. And we added about V7, V8 crop growth stage of corn. And
what does that mean?
So usually, the critical crop growth stage would be for corn is V5, V6. And then the silking stage comes.
Okay.
So we wanted to add just before that so that when you see that the cobs are forming and all, they are not eating them.
Ah, yes, of course.
Okay, right? You want that. And they're pretty big part, as I said. They can usually jump or something.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as they see those grains or seeds, they will love to have them. But we also do not want that, okay, our grain yield is being hampered.
Yeah.
So this year we worked on that one. We added them and we see that, okay, they pretty much actually, they forage them nicely. I mean, we see a clear difference. But in my presentation, I'm going to show some photos that one half where we did not add turkey, another half where we added turkey, they look completely different. And we actually added them just for a week to 10 days.
Really? That short a period?
That short short amount of time. And within that, you know, 8 to 10 days, we see they pretty much cleared out everything.
And was the corn tall then at that time pretty much? Or?
So that's a different story kind of.
Okay.
So last year, we did not get a good results on our corn grain yield because we had that drought going on still. We had a hailstorm in that Blue Earth City close to that area, I think a couple of times. My farm was a little bit hit by then. We had grasshopper attack. Yeah, so we had so many different reasons that didn't work the way that we thought.
Is it accurate then at this point to say you've actually found some results, or do you have to wait till you do it more years to actually pinpoint something to say this is a good thing or bad thing or indifferent?
So, no, we already got a lot of results, actually. Last 2 years of data now we have, and I have collected like a huge amount of data set, different soil health kind of data as well as plant health data, because those are the two major things that we are targeting. Okay, so for soil health, we have collected different soil physical parameters, chemical parameters, and biological parameters. For plant health, we measured plant height, how much is the chlorophyll content, or like what is the total grain yield that we got at the end, you know. Then maybe we also measured that, okay, cobs weight, number of grains per cobs. So these are very typical like agronomic, you know, parameters that most of the scientists that they would measure. So I'm also doing the same things. So yeah, we have some of those results and I kind of started processing them. So what we found so far, and I can tell you that, which is not super positive at this moment, it looks like.
Okay.
It looks like that the control is performing much better than our perennial cover crop treatment.
And the control is the?
The one which is with 30-inch corn row with no cover crops.
The traditional.
The traditional one. And that's what we call control, or in this case, the conventional method.
Okay.
Whereas my cover crop treatments, we did not see the positive results, or what was our hypothesis that, okay, we would see some improvement over there, but we did not see it yet. But as I told you, sometimes these systems, it takes a long time.
Right.
And it's only 2 years. So 2 years is nothing actually to get the results the way you can envision.
What did you find out in the one with the 60-inch wide rows with the cover crops in between, or the perennials in between and the turkeys? What did that turn out to be?
So there are some interesting results that we found. One great result that I would love to share here is the weed. Last year, actually, first time, and again, that was not my primary goal when we started this project, because I'm a soil person. I'm not a plant person
right.
in general. Even the soil plant, they go side by side. But Still, I wanted to get some cover crop biomass data. And while we are collecting that, at the same time, we tried to separate how many weeds are weed biomass. And we got a really, really good results. And what we found, that we saw maximum amount of weed is present in our control or the conventional treatment. And out of those perennial cover crop treatment, we saw that the grass legume mixture, where we have the least amount of weed. So that's a definitely a good sign that it is suppressing a lot of those weeds. Out of those three cover crop treatments, we saw that the maximum amount of weed is in the legume treatment, okay? It could be that, okay, already a lot of nitrogen is there and that is kind of boosting them. So we do not know yet, kind of, but that's kind of my hypothesis, that could be. And in addition to that one, you also see that, okay, in the poultry treatment, sometimes it's less because they are already kind of foraging a lot of those weed seeds.
Did you look at the soil fertility afterwards in terms of, was the one with the added organic matter from the turkeys, was that better in terms of the percentages of NPK or?
Sure. Yeah. In fact, we have been collecting those data of all the macronutrient and micronutrient, which is part of the soil fertility evaluation. So that means macronutrient would be including your NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, and calcium, magnesium, sulfur. And then there are like a lot of micronutrient. It could be like iron, zinc, copper, manganese, boron, those kind of stuff. I have 2 years of data with me. Honestly, right now I'm processing. But if I remember correctly, I think I did a quick kind of calculation. They kind of look pretty much the same. So that means they are right now not significantly different, like in a statistical term, if I talk about that. Mm-hmm.
Did you fertilize the traditional way, the control crop then?
They were all treated pretty much the same way. We added some amount of nitrogen-based fertilizer. It's called UAN.
And pesticides? Did you use?
No, we didn't use any pesticides.
Or herbicides?
We did use some herbicides though, because especially last year, at the very beginning when we need to plant our corn, because we already had a good establishment of our cover crop, so we need to kind of a little bit terminate it. Where we had our strip tillage, in those rows, we kind of added some 2,4-D herbicides and tried to kill them so that we can start growing our major crop, which is the corn, so that there's not much competition is going on. But having said that, the way we thought, I'm totally dependent on my farmer who I'm working with. I know he has been working really, really hard, but it was not properly managed the way we thought, I guess. Yeah, a lot of interesting thing is going on there.
So does this, what you're doing, any of it look economically feasible for farmers, or at this time, maybe the traditional way is what's working best at this time that you know?
Yes and no, I will say that. Definitely, I would suggest that, okay, having cover crop would be beneficial for in so many ways, and we all know that, okay, it has a lot of benefits. Definitely, we have to have a lot of patience for that one to get the better results. Sometimes 2 years or 3 years is not good. Secondly, I would recommend that, okay, perennial cover crops, it's kind of new. We already know a lot of technologies. We know different management practices for annual cover crops. Yeah. So we definitely need a lot more research on perennial cover crops. I know in Iowa State University, they are doing a lot of research on perennial cover crops right now. Here in Minnesota, I think University of Minnesota, they also have one or two projects on perennial cover crops. All over the nation, also, there are a few universities, they are doing it, but it's not that common. So we need more research so that we learn more out of these kind of systems. And I'm still positive that, okay, it has a huge amount of potential, and that's the way we can change the Midwestern landscape.
So what is next for you? Will you continue this particular project? Will you modify it for future?
Honestly, I would love to continue with this thing. As I said, the way I thought that, okay, it should work, it didn't work.
But okay. That's what science is about.
Exactly. Sometimes it doesn't work. And especially in my world, like when you are dealing with a lot of these natural systems, when you are dependent on your mother nature, like right. Some of the year you get a lot of rain, some of the year you do not get any rain. Some years you do not have much of those pest attack, and another year you see a lot of those grasshoppers are coming back. Okay. So there are a lot of constraints and we have to deal with it. You know, I mean, it's not that I have any excuse for that one. We just need to be better managed. We need to think about the science. At the same time, we need to think about how we can do our job in a better way. So we need more research definitely on these things. And I would love to continue this kind of research if I find out other farmers who would be interested. But at the same time, I need more funding. So that means I need to write more grants. And if all the funding agencies, they are excited about this kind of projects, if they think like, okay, it has a huge potential, then maybe I'll be continuing with this kind of projects.
I do think it's important because of the way I've seen the soil deteriorate. As mm-hmm. as a gardener myself, I know how important it is to build it up. So I'm glad to hear that there's being research done. And I hope that you do have some luck in getting that funding.
In fact, one more thing, I think I missed that okay, I want to add. Nitrogen-wise, like especially inorganic nitrogen, mm-hmm. We saw that inorganic nitrogen is pretty good in our cover crop treatments, which is very good. And in both ways. First of all, it is available for the cash crop. At the same time, a lot of those nitrogen which is being lost and causing a lot of these environmental problems, especially water quality problems, they are already there within our soils.
They're keeping it.
So that means those systems are behaving more like a conservative systems instead of a very leaky system.
Well, isn't why the prairies used to work in the past? Because
exactly.
all of those grasses and different things would keep all that nitrogen from going elsewhere.
Exactly. That is the purpose. In fact, when I work with my farmer and I say that, you know, even though we are not getting the results that I would expect, but look at your neighbors. Look at you. Your farm looks green. Everything is covered. You are not losing any soils. Your soil is already a lot of organic matter already present, and we are slowly building it up. Whereas other farmers, your neighbors, they do not have those things. I still see when I, you know, drive down there, a lot of them are still doing those conventional tillage practices. And we see a lot of those dust outside, you know. So we are losing a lot of soil through water erosion, through wind erosions.
Now, people can learn more if they attend on Monday, April 1st. It's 7 to 8:30 p.m. in the Ostrander Auditorium here on the campus at Minnesota State University, and that's at the Centennial Student Union. And you will be doing this presentation showing the results of this and anything else you feel that's why it should be important for people to come and learn more.
I think three things, maybe. Oh, number one, I would say, first of all, learn about how you can improve your soil health or how you can build soil health, even though we are not getting good or positive result. But as I said, it takes time. So it's too early to make any conclusion. Okay, so I have included in my project at least two or three major principles of soil health that NRCS or Natural Resource Conservation Service that they have. Number one, we are not doing too much tillage. We are doing strip tillage or no tillage. Number two, we have the diversity. That means we have a lot of these different species of cover crops, whether it's legume or grass. Third thing, we are integrating livestock in terms of poultry. So again, as I said, we need more research. It's not that I know everything, and I need to collaborate with a lot of other agronomists, maybe some poultry scientists and all, plant pathologists, disease management guys and all, so that we can learn more out of it.
Well, I hope you get a good attendance because I think this is a lot of great information. I want to thank you. We've been talking with Dr. Briganco Day, who is an assistant professor here at Minnesota State University in the Department of Biological Sciences, who is honored with presenting the 2024 Douglas R. Moore Faculty Research Lecture. And congratulations to you for being selected.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for having me.